Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for the very last week of December and 2017. I'm your host, Paul Rubin. Today, I'll be talking with local hikers explorers Lee Jacobson and Doug Scott. Lee, Doug, would you like to introduce yourselves?
Pleasure to be here, Paul. I'm Lee Jacobson.
And I'm Doug Scott, and it's great to be here in Port Townsend.
Before we get into our topic of the day, which is going to be hiking the Olympics, first, we're going to hear this week's mystery sound. These birds winter in our area on open ocean and large freshwater lakes. They are one of very few diving ducks who make a substantial call. They're also the deepest divers and remain submerged the longest, staying underwater three or four times as much than on the surface when foraging. That's one long hint. For observation and news, I'd like to share a brief account of the Olympic Mountains described by naturalist John Muir in 1919. Muir, along with Congressman James Wickersham and Lieutenant Joseph O'Neill, proposed to conserve land within the Olympic Peninsula in 1890. In his book entitled Steep Trails, he writes, "The Olympic Mountains, most of all, command attention, seen tellingly near and clear in all their glory, rising from the water's edge into the sky to a height of 6,000 or 8,000 feet. They bound the strait of the south side throughout its whole extent, forming a massive sustained wall, flowery and bushy at the base, a zigzag of snowy peaks along the top, which have ragged-edged fields of ice and snow beneath them, enclosed in wide amphitheaters opening in the waters of the strait through spacious forest-filled valleys enlivened with fine, dashing streams. These valleys mark the courses of the Olympic glaciers at the period of their greatest extension, when they poured their tribute into the portion of the great northern ice sheet that overswept the south end of Vancouver Island and filled the strait with flowing ice as it is now filled with the ocean water." He goes on into length about Port Townsend at this time. It's definitely worth a read.
All the darkest days are behind us, unless you're a cougar or some other nocturnal forager. You'll be glad to learn that the three shortest periods of daylight have passed. Winter solstice marks the moment the sun is at its farthest point from the equator. In the northern hemisphere, that moment usually occurs on December 21st. Ancient peoples rejoiced at the sign of the sun moving 1 degree north, and I do too.
And with the changes of longer days and maybe warmer weather, the snowpack at the Olympics right now is actually doing pretty well. We had a bit of a lull in late November and early December, but we're still at 137% of normal, which compared to 2 years ago is a blessing. There are a few places that aren't doing as well snowpack-wise, especially in the rain shadow. The Dungeness area is only at 105% of normal. But the late snow that's come in December definitely is going to hopefully give us a better hydrological outlook for the rest of the winter.
That's a great update, so appreciate that. I think that's going to help a lot of people as they plan hiking trips and other adventures through the Olympics.
It's really going to open up the snowshoeing, especially Hurricane Ridge. So if you're looking to get out.
That's exciting. It's not too far, so definitely look into that. Have you noticed the changes in wildlife lately? Winter migration is in full swing throughout the Olympic Peninsula. Waterfowl such as harlequin ducks, long-tailed ducks, green-winged teal, American widgeons, buffalo heads, horned grebes, red-breasted mergansers, hooded mergansers, northern shovelers, common goldeneye, surf, white-winged, and black scoters have all been spotted in multiple areas along the strait, sound, and inland. I recently spotted a Wilson snipe while surveying the coho with the North Olympic Salmon Coalition and a pair of greater yellowlegs while driving by Mystery Bay. For more rare spotting, a yellow-billed loon has been reported multiple times near Point Hudson. Larger than common loon, yellow-billed loon have an entirely pale bill, bearing on the back and neck. They are considered very rare, with the exception of Arctic Canada and the coasts of Alaska and British Columbia. Okay, so let's get into our interview portion of today. What gets you guys out there? There are a lot of different motivations that people have for hiking, but what are your biggest pushes that get you to the craziest terrain?
I think for me, I first got out there to find some sort of way to calm my soul. I was doing a lot of political consulting work, and my days were very stressful, and I needed some sort of release. And when I discovered that I could push my body as hard as I could to climb some of the mountains on the eastern slopes of the Olympics, I would reach the top and just be able to sit at the summit and have this kind of soul-nourishing moment where I could take in the grandeur of all of the Pacific Northwest from a mountain peak and just be able to be happy and remember what this is all about and what I'm doing doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. You get to look at a different time schedule of the world from any mountain.
Yeah, it's a great feeling. I've had that a few times, and every time I do, I never forget it.
Yeah, it's always a life-changing moment when you stand on a new summit or hike a new trail and see that vista for the first time. You get to be inspired all over again. And then what transitioned me into talking about all of the hiking is I wanted more people to have that moment. I saw people struggling with addiction, struggling with all of these things in life, and I knew I found something that healed me. So I'm going to share this with as many people as I can and see if I can change one more person. And so I told my friends, told my family, and then it all spiraled into telling random strangers every chance I get.
That's awesome. Yeah. Lee?
Well, it's interesting to hear Doug's remarks because mine are very similar. I basically hike for two reasons. I hike for the views and I hike for the serenity. I also have a fairly high-stress job right now. Getting out into the mountains is a form of meditation where I slowly leave all of that behind until near the top there's just one more step and your breath and the views around you, and it brings me into the moment. I find peace at that time. I have kind of a flippant way to describe it. I say I hike to forget.
You're both two of very few people who get to see these things, I think. I know there are a lot of hikers out there, and we'll talk more about the groups that organize these things and or just people that go out there. I definitely would like to be more involved in hiking and seeing these things. And for me, I like to see wildlife. I like to understand systems. And I think there may be somewhat of a disconnect between just hikers and just naturalists. So bringing the two things together has been something I've always been interested in. And I think you get that in a lot of different ways. And hiking can be so many things for so many people. And I think it's just so cool when you're able to make that peak. Would you guys like to talk about your favorite scenic trails or different areas of the Olympic National Park?
What I find so incredible about the Olympics, full disclosure here, I'm from Seattle. I hike the Cascades more than the Olympics, but I have gotten to all four corners of Olympic National Park. While part of me is still partial to the Cascades in terms of just pure scenery and variety of terrain, what strikes me about the Olympics every time I come out here is how remote they are. You cannot get that sense of remoteness in the Cascades. You can't get 5, 10, 15 miles away from anybody or anything like you can in the Olympics. My favorite trips in the Olympics, probably my favorite day hike is Royal Basin. It's a long hike, 7 miles or so, I think, each way, and then another mile up to Upper Royal Basin. It's really otherworldly, spectacular scenery. You won't find too many people up there. And if you're a hardy hiker, you can make it there in a day and back. First time I did it was a backpack. And next time I managed to make it in a day. And I guess the other hike I'd like to mention today is one that I just did this fall, the North Fork of the Skokomish River up over First Divide and down to Home Sweet Home. It was a remarkable experience. It was a late season hike. We were able to have fires down in the valley, and the fall leaves had all fallen. There's a lot of deciduous trees down there, and the leaves were decaying, and it was still just a remarkable feeling to be there. Once we got past Staircase, we saw three people in 3 days, and they were all headed out. And by the time we ended up at Home Sweet Home, I figured my friend and I were probably the only two people within a 100-square-mile area. Wow. And that's just an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
And for me, having a favorite area is always tough to choose. And while I love the rainforest and I love to get into like the Bogachiel and the Quinault or go to Shy Shy Beach, the Hood Canal hikes, all the river basins out there are where I find a perfect balance of beauty and challenge in hikes, as Lee was talking about Royal Basin. That hike is long, and every mile somehow gets better. mm-hmm. and every view becomes more dramatic. And it's the entire way along the Hood Canal. If you go up the Duckabush, if you go the Hama Hama, you're going to find these steep trails that will make you question sanity. Mm-hmm. But then the minute you get to the destination, you realize that this is the wildest side of the peninsula. The rainforest is great, but when you have to climb straight up mm-hmm. to get something, when there's headwalls and there's alpine lakes that reward you with mountain reflections, it's hard to beat. I mean, Upper Lena Lake is Lower Lena Lake, super popular. Mm-hmm. Upper Lena Lake is, I refer to it as a mini glacier national park. Because the way the mountains reflect off the lake, there's never anybody there except for the busiest of summer days. And so you have true wilderness just at your fingertips for, I think, 7 miles to get up, 7 miles back.
I'm in the sailing community, so I've heard a lot of different things. But a lot of the time you do experience a, like, on the spectrum of happy and, like, crazy. And it's 0 to 10. Mm-hmm. So it's the fight to get there, but every time you're greeted with this 10 scenic view or just spotting this amazing animal in its natural habitat, or it's usually amazing feeling. And I really do enjoy it. You can't do it forever. That's why I think hiking is something we do and we plan for it. It's nice to have a stability at some point, but when you do have the opportunity to make it to that next point and to really experience something and to do it in its fullest by yourself in such a remote place, those are the experiences you'll always have with you. Are there any lesser known trails that people may overlook that are actually within distance and not so hard to access?
I have a favorite lesser known trail that anybody that knows me knows that I will not stop talking about it. It's out of Staircase, and it's the steepest trail in Olympic National Park from parking lot to destination. Great. It's not necessarily the steepest trail overall, but miles per foot of elevation gained, it's the hardest trail from a parking lot. And that is up from Staircase to Wagon Wheel Lake, and then up to Cub Peak, which is a obscure mountain peak that's not really a mountain, but it gives you these unrivaled views of the entire Staircase area, including the backside of Mount Eleanor, the backside of Mount Washington, and an up-close view of Mount Pershing that year-round is one of those places where I'll just sit down and almost be brought to tears because of the beauty and the solitude. And there's at most one other person there. I will rep that hike every day of the week as long as I can.
I'm going to start writing these down. I think if you're willing and able to get up that trail from the parking lot, it's totally worth the hike. Yeah.
It's 4,000 feet of elevation gain in about 3.5 miles.
Yeah.
So it's not for everyone, but those who do make their way up are rewarded with this plateau and then a peak. It's unreal.
Lee, would you like to add? Or
as someone from the other side of the pond, I've pretty much stuck to the well-known trails and have knocked most of them off, but haven't gotten to exploring some of the off-the-beaten-path stuff like Doug probably has.
Could you guys tell me any interesting wildlife you spotted or any encounters you've had with wildlife?
Well, my best wildlife encounter ever was in the Enchanted Valley. We were doing a 4-day Cross the Olympics ski exchange hike where a couple of my friends came from the Dosey Wallops side, and a friend of mine and I came from the Quinault side, and we met in the Enchanted Valley, exchanged car keys, stayed there for a day, and then on day 3, we started continuing our respective treks out to the vehicles. My friend and I had a long day that day, we knew it, so we were up early, and we were moving fast through the Enchanted Valley and not making any noise. We were going through this, seemed like it was an alleyway of salmonberry bushes. And the next thing I knew, I heard a noise right next to me. And the whole thing happened before I knew what was going on. But I saw the big rear end of a black bear.
Wow.
Close enough for me to touch. And he was hightailing it out of there. And my heart was in my throat. Yeah, and then I kind of figured out what had happened. And we had just come upon him fast and come upon her fast, I don't know, and startled her and scared the heck out of me. And So
it's always kind of frightening. You never know how you're going to react in that situation, but you try to keep your cool with it. At least it was kind of scared of you and it ran off.
I've seen many bears in Olympic National Park, and they have reacted to me in one of two ways, either running away or indifference.
That's good to know.
Never had any trouble with them.
Yeah, and I've kind of experienced the same thing in my history with wildlife.
Yeah.
There are those situations, and they do happen. You have to be prepared. But for the most part, wildlife are in the same situation as you, and they have much better noses and senses, and they usually know what's going on. And if they want to mess with you, they make that pretty obvious.
Well, luckily that one was over quickly.
Yeah, but always frightening, always something that throws us off. Do you want to share a quick one?
Yeah. For me, we could obviously talk about the mountain goats in the Olympics. I think anybody that's hiked out in the peaks there has an experience of their curiosity and their inability to let you really observe, leave no trace, distance regulations. But for me, I think the Olympics, the animals that I love seeing are the marmots, because they're a unique subspecies of marmot. They are only found on the Olympic Peninsula, and to see them just sunning on the rocks when you know they have to deal with the harshness of winter, it's just this fun experience to just watch them. I think the great places to do that are up at Lake of the Angels above the Hamahama, or even out on Obstruction Point Road or Deer Park too. You can see a lot of them out there, and they're just great.
I've even seen them at Hurricane Ridge.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, right off the visitor center there. Same with the mountain goats.
Yep.
I've experienced them a few times. But that's actually a great segue into my next question, because the Olympic marmots are directly affected by this decreasing snowfall over the past few decades to past century. If you guys have noticed anything, because this does affect habitat for them and other plants and animals, with the decreased amount of snowfall and the more rain that we're getting, a lot of the forests are moving their way into the meadows that were at one point just completely covered with snowfall, so that they would kind of keep the meadows a meadow, whereas now the disturbance is gone, and so that these trees are moving in, these different fir and spruce moving in up there. So if you want to just kind of describe a quick observations you guys have made in your past couple of years to past decade hiking, if you've noticed any major changes, glaciers are a good example.
So I think one of the most obvious places to see the loss of glaciers in Olympic is on the route that Lee was talking about above Enchanted Valley up at the Anderson Glacier.
Mm-hmm.
That glacier, when I first backpacked through there in the early 90s as a kid, we went up and got to see the glacier, and it was amazing. And then 3 or 4 years ago, I went, and it looked like the glacier was the size of a bus.
Wow.
And so that prompted me to do some research, and there's a misleading stat out there, at least 3 years ago this was true, is that the amount of glaciers in Olympic National Park has actually increased in the last 30 years. But that's because the known glaciers are actually melting out and becoming two glaciers instead of just one large one.
Okay.
So we're seeing this mass exodus of the snowpack and the glaciers. And with the winter of 2015 really impacting, I think we noticed for the first time as a larger hiking community this loss of snow and how important it actually is. And I think if we look at salmon numbers in the next few years, we're going to continue to see that with the loss of glaciers and lower snowpacks, the salmon aren't getting as high up into the rivers, and we're going to start seeing the impact of that a lot more.
Oh, yeah. It impacts them very much with the rivers, the snowpack melting and then creating that habitat. Have you noticed any changes, Lee?
The biggest thing that I've noticed is the extension of the high mountain summer hiking season. When I first started hiking through the first 10 or 15 years, the season was pretty much over by the beginning of October, and now it extends all the way through October, which is great news in one sense, but it's an indication of what's going on out there.
Well, it's good to know that the science does actually kind of go with the observations, because people hiking all the time, it's a sort of citizen science in that you guys are out there taking mental notes or physical notes of what you're experiencing, and we can actually get a lot of information from that. So it's good to know that you are there seeing this, and we're able to know or at least be aware of this. I'm going to reveal that mystery sound, so let's hear that mystery sound one more time. Be careful not to confuse it with other waterfowl that also have significant calls and songs. That was the loud yodeling call of a male long-tailed duck. Females make a soft quacking irk-irk-irk or kak-kak-kak-kak. Long-tailed ducks are most vocal between February and June. Formerly known as Old Squaw, long-tailed ducks have three unique plumages changing each year. They are medium-sized diving ducks with black wingtips throughout all plumages. Central tail feathers are very long, and flight is a rapid rising and falling, twisting low over water. Thank you to Cornell Lab of Ornithology and Macaulay Library for these sound recordings and descriptions. For our upcoming events, Lee, would you like to start us off?
Help celebrate the wilderness within with the Olympic chapter of the Native Plant Society January 1st at Cappy's Woods and Trails in the Quimper Wildlife Corridor. The hike begins at 10 a.m. and will be between 2 and 4 miles.
The 2017 Port Angeles Christmas Bird Count is taking place December 30th. Visit the Audubon Society, Olympic Peninsula, for more information.
So I would like to tell you all to go to outdoor-society.com. That's the website that I run. And we have just released our brand new 52 Olympic Peninsula Hikes guidebook, which is perfect for those people who are really looking to either connect or reconnect with the Olympic Peninsula and the best hikes. I've hiked them all numerous times, and it's one of those books with full-color pictures and great descriptions that's going to make sure to motivate anybody that opens it.
I'd like to add that this talk is only so long that we're having here, so this is a great resource for people to get a much more extended version of what we're talking about here.
Exactly. And on the website as well, we do make sure to talk about snowpack, to talk about road closures, anything that's going on the Olympic Peninsula, we try to cover as fast as possible.
I am the lead administrator for what is probably the largest Facebook hiking group in the United States, Washington Hikers and Climbers. It's a page I created almost 4 years ago. Most of the first members were my Twitter friends, including Doug here today. It has grown in popularity immensely over the years. We now have approximately 83,000 members. It is what I consider to be sort of the Facebook hiking page for the masses. We have a wide range of experienced members on the page, some just starting out, some are true mountaineers. It's probably for the masses, as opposed to some of the other hiking pages on Facebook, like northwesthikers.net, which is run by our mutual acquaintance, Barefoot Jake Morrison, and he would have been a great guest to have here today. Check out Washington Hikers and Climbers. Lots of pretty pictures and some good information.
I visited the Washington Hikers and Climbers page, and I posted some pictures to it. And I'll say, every time I go to it, I always see some inspiring picture of somebody. Right now, it's all snow and frozen lakes and just these amazing shots that you never really get to see, but there's always someone out there, and it's just so cool to be connected with people who are doing it. If you have questions, you can go and you can find out simple things, what field gear to bring with you and what to look for, and quick way you can get connected with other people who have already been there. So that's actually a great part of technology that we don't always get to see. We always kind of bash, oh, looking at your phone or some other thing, but this is a great way to utilize that tool. You have the world with you right there. And I think that will wrap up this episode of Nature Now. So thank you for joining Nature Now for this last episode of the year. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community we live in. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have any comments, observations, or ideas. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ 91.9 FM on Thursdays at 5:05 p.m. and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Recent podcasts are also available on KPTZ website. Thank you for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Hiking, performed by Patty Mills.
Had a backpack with it, a bottle of water and some bread, and a notebook and a pen and all my friends. We headed out into the trees, disappeared into the breeze. If you please, I'd like to get some grass stains on my knees. Well, we slowed the whole world down, climbed to the top and then we turned around. Do you remember the time we headed out into the great unknown? get back home. We sang do 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 do